You can see that I'm technology challenged. Oh, there we go. Things are starting to happen. When we originally started the PowerPoint, I was thinking we need a roadmap. And the truth be known, it's not really a roadmap. It's a safety net. You know, you put two attorneys in the room, you usually get five opinions. You put three of us up here, what do we get? Maybe 7.5 opinions. But I'm always worried about putting three guys up here who are just bone tired and really can't remember what they're supposed to say. So the PowerPoint is a safety net, but it also gives you guys some hard examples of the things that we're looking at when we're looking at statutes. With respect to that, this is how I feel about PowerPoint. Not something I'm big on. If you can't read that, you get your ego tied up in what you do when you do these things. I try to divorce my ego, but the PowerPoint is not the end-all, do-all. What's the end-all, do-all is what these gentlemen have to say about some of the things that I've raised in the PowerPoint. And, of course, we have death by PowerPoint, as we all know. Attorney Weasel words, these are our opinions, don't represent the law firm, the institution that brought this to you, that kind of stuff. If it's smart, it's probably Joe or Matt. If it's not very smart and want to blame somebody for politically incorrect, it's probably me. Another disclaimer, you know what they are, just Attorney Weasel words. This is the real rubber meets the road situation right here. Four contexts in a career where it comes up where we have to worry about criminal complications. Advanced education, are you going to spend your money and find out you can't get a license later? When you're applying for your license, do you have to tell them? Do you have to report something to them? Do you have to answer something in detail? Agency investigations get triggered. Is it going to be concurrent with what's going on with Joe or Matt in a criminal context? Is it going to be parallel? Those kind of things. We also deal with it when we're looking at loss of license and trying to get reinstated. Always problematic. So these are the areas that we encounter, and as you go through it, you'll see that I've got an example of basic priorities. Rule number one, don't go to prison. Plain and simple. Rule number two should be don't go to prison. Rule number three should be don't go to prison. But I thought in order to keep them in sequence, we would just go this way. Avoid incarceration on a prison sentence. You can do a couple days in jail overnight. We can live with that. We can work with it. But if you go to prison, you're going to get revoked or suspended. Typically, it's revocation. It's going to happen. The train's on the tracks. It's just a matter of time until they get around to you. Conviction of a felony, ripple effect also. Crime of moral turpitude, we can talk about that at length, but anything that is basically insidious, deceptive, and those kind of things. Then anything related to your practice. If there's a nexus to your practice, if you were cloaked in your lab coat when you did it, if you were the exterminator that went in there and burglarized the home while you were there to exterminate the pests or the plumber that was working, professional practice nexus is going to sink you. And then any egregious offenses that we're talking about, and there's some special statutes out there, and there's some that you need to look up that are going to go into effect in September that have expanded the list of really bad stuff that you can't do. The obvious things, pedophilia, anything things that's really got the moral turpitude stamp on it.
Tim.
Yes, sir.
Can I step in? One thing for you folks that deal with professional licensees that come to you and say, I have just been arrested, and my criminal defense lawyer tells me it's going to cost $10,000 to $20,000 to defend this case. What do you think? If it's going to result in a final conviction, your only question to them is, how much do you love your license? If you spend a lot of money to get your license, then be prepared to spend a lot of money to save it. If that requires going to trial, then pay the freight. And we'll deal with the administrative fallout later. But a lot of times, professionals are business people, and they look at terms of cost-benefit. And if they love what they do, they're going to have to pay a lot of money. And if it means they take out a second mortgage on their home, then that's just what they're going to have to do. So don't be afraid to tell them the hard truth. That also means that you might want to make sure that the defense lawyer that they have retained or that they're talking to is capable of going to trial and giving them a fighting chance of winning if it's a winnable case. Is that about right, Joe? Mm-hmm. So, don't be afraid to give them the hard news, all right? They need it, and they are looking to you to deliver it to them.
You know, we get paid to tell them what they need to hear, not what they want to hear. And I can tell you that price is always a factor. Whether you're trying to get somebody into recovery in an inpatient rehabilitation facility, they always tell you, I can't be away from my practice that long. I can't be gone for 30 to 60 days. I can't afford that. but they can't afford not to. And, you know, they've got a Hobson's choice. If they don't do what we're telling them to do or asking them to do or recommending for them to do, they're going to lose their license, and they're going to lose more money in the long term than they're going to lose in the short. Sometimes their headlights only go about 50 feet. They don't see around the corner. They don't see the S-curve coming up. And as lawyers, we have that obligation to explain to them that this criminal thing that we're talking about, you don't think it's a big deal, but the ripple effect is huge. With that in mind, I always talk to them about the financial side of it. You know, as a young lawyer, I never understood what it meant to be a counselor at law. I knew what an attorney was, but an attorney and counselor at law translates to life coach, translates to babysitter, psychologist, you know, the best friend that you've ever paid for. It's one of those kind of scenarios. And I have to affiliate with bankruptcy lawyers all the time. I have to talk to bankers. I have to get with accountants. And we're dealing with every aspect of their life, from what's going to happen to my college fund for my kid. I have to pay tuition next week. And then we know from experience, and I know you, those of you in the government might not feel our pain, but I will represent a dirtbag lawyer. I mean, excuse me, not lawyer. That's a Freudian slip. Dirtbag doctor. funny what comes out when you're up here under pressure. But I will represent a bad doctor sometimes, not because I love the doctor, not because I love his case. It's because I know he's got five employees. Two of them are single mothers with children with special needs. If he loses his license in 8 to 10 months, they lose their job in small town Texas. So what motivates you as a lawyer to do a good job, whether it's protecting the Constitution as a criminal defense lawyer, protecting the statute that's got an immunity provision that's important for a licensee out there, or protecting the people that are tied up to the ripple effect? That's all part of what we're dealing with in these complications. With that said, let me just punch through a little bit of this PowerPoint just to kind of move it off the screen.